Just a heads up, before we play you today's episode, Daniela does mention having suicidal thoughts in this episode. It may not be suitable for everyone. If you or someone you know is affected by the themes she speaks about, you can get help in the UK by visiting the Samaritans website. There's a link in the show notes.
My dad believed that the man's job in the marriage or in the relationship was to provide for the woman, and that everything I made was just gravy. That was a very old school, you know, Niagara Falls mentality. My mother's an immigrant from Colombia. She actually comes from a lineage of fucking badass women.
That's Daniela Pearson, the founder of The Newsette, a women-focused newsletter company she started when she was at university at just 19 years old. Now 27, she was recently named by Forbes as one of the wealthiest women of color in the United States. The Newsette currently has more than 500,000 subscribers. Revenue grew from $1 million in 2019 to $40 million in 2021, just 2 years. In that time, Daniela started a creative agency, Newland, which works with Fortune 500 brands. Now, all this has made the Newsette the 16th most successful company in America, according to Inc.com, based on its growth over the last 3 years of over 16,000%. And not just that. Last year, Daniela, who has ADHD, OCD, and depression, co-founded mental health company Wondermind, with Selena Gomez and Selena's mother, Mandy Teefy. It was recently valued at $100 million. Whew. Welcome to Secret Leaders from Kindling Media. I'm your host, Dan Murray-Serta, and I'm a founder myself. So in my conversations with other entrepreneurs, I try to use my own experience to get under the skin of what got them to where they are today. Daniela grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, what she describes as the unsexy part of the state. She didn't always find it easy to fit in.
I have an identical twin sister. So she was always my best friend. It wasn't really that easy for us to make friends. We didn't click with the vibe of, like two-faced, tweens or teenagers or whatever. We rather just do our own thing. So we had a few friends, but we always had each other. But the big thing was that my sister was the star. She was the top of the class. She still is, super brilliant and just really great at school. And I was essentially the dumb twin because I was, a B and C student. And so my parents would grade us on, a scale of if Alex didn't get all A's, my twin, then she'd get in trouble. But if I got B's and C's, I was good. So luckily they understood that there was a gap in between, interest level or maybe intelligence when it comes to school. And they didn't hold me to the same standard. But I didn't know at the time. I actually didn't know until about probably 6 months ago. But along with OCD and depression, I also have ADHD, which makes a lot of sense now, especially to my parents, because if I really wanted to focus on something, I could do it and I could excel. But if I was absolutely not interested in something, I just could not. It was nearly impossible to get me to, focus on that one thing. And so I remember many sleepless nights where my mother, who is also a genius like my sister, would stay up until, the wee hours of the morning, as you guys would say, and give me, flashcard tests for a science or whatnot. And I was probably so frustrating, but I just could not focus. However, my junior year of high school, I realized that my sister was getting all of these letters from all of these incredible universities that were going to take her far, far away from Jacksonville, Florida, and that I was not. And so I really put myself into gear junior year. I basically decided that since I didn't have a lot of friends, I didn't have a lot that I was missing out on during school hours, that I would take every single second. So every lunch break, every activity break, every free period, during class, etc., I would devote strictly to just studying, almost like an 8-hour sprint. And I actually went from BSEs to straight A's and A pluses in all of my classes. And I think that really surprised a lot of people. And that's how I knew I was the dumb twin, because people would turn around and say, I thought you were the dumb twin, when I would get my like A plus test. But truly, yeah, it was just because I realized, oh shit, if I don't get my shit together, you know, I'm going to stay here forever, and I want to go far away, and I know that I belong in a big city, and I want the option to be able to go somewhere like that.
Such a great early opportunity for you as well to learn one of the key lessons in life people spend decades trying to realize and learn, which is, for most of us, you know, most, myself included for sure, aren't gifted or overly intelligent. And especially, like, I relate because I suck at academia. I really just am not the type of person who can do any of the stuff that you just described as well. Very similarly, got straight A's after being predicted all B's. I consequently got none of the universities that I was applying for because I got predicted all B's, and I got all A's because I worked my ass off to do it, or ass, as you guys would say. And so I massively relate. But then one of the really defining and interesting characteristics of entrepreneurs quite often is that it isn't easy for us. And that actually, you know, yes, it's amazing to be incredibly smart and ridiculously hardworking. But I think effort beats intelligence all day long over a career. And one of the things that people like us get to learn very early on is that with enough effort, you can surprise yourself.
Yeah, you definitely can. There's a quote from someone who I think is a bit problematic now. I think it's Will Smith. But I've always loved the quote that it's, I'm going to butcher it, but it's like, you know, I may not be the most talented, but I will die on the treadmill, or the fastest runner, but I will die on the treadmill. So it's like, you know, I may not be the most smart or, you know, gifted person in the room, but I will never stop. And ultimately, as you know, as an entrepreneur, the people who win just never stop. It's almost like we have the dumb gene in us that keeps us going. Ultimately, as an entrepreneur, you don't need to be the smartest person in the room. You just need to be the person that everybody believes in. And you need to be the person who can take all of the people who are smarter than you in their specific categories and make magic. And so when I learned that through starting the Newsette, and I realized, wow, you know, I don't have to be a 50-year-old man from Harvard, white man from Harvard, you know, to succeed and make millions of dollars. That really opened my eyes to how the world works. And it really is the reason why I, you know, want my story to be heard by people who maybe had this similar mindset as me, that they were a loser, that they could never succeed because they were the dumb one, or they weren't special, they had no talent or whatever, because I certainly had none. And I might not look like the typical, you know, success story, I guess the Forbes headline of the youngest, wealthiest, self-made person of color. I definitely don't look the part of that, you know, that very big headline, $220 million, you know, net worth, etc. But that's why I want to show people that you don't have to look like what success has looked like in the past. You just have to push forward so that success looks like anything.
I mean, it's so well said, and also like a really great early reflection, right? So you've learned a lot of lessons so fast from a young age by just heading head first into these things. So, you know, let's crack on with the story. You finished university, straight A's, or finished school rather, straight A's, affording you the opportunity to go elsewhere. So what did the next 3-4 years look like for you?
I knew that college just wasn't for me. The second I went in, and my first classes were all of the things that I had learned in high school and in middle school, because the first 2 years of my program, we were literally doing history and English and science. And I was like, I want to be in business, or I want to write for magazines. What am I doing? And so it was almost escapism for me to get a job. So I worked at the Abercrombie in Cambridge, which was about an hour train each way. And my parents were horrified that I would do this, because not only was I making minimum wage, and it probably wasn't even covering, you know, the train and everything to get there. But they also, you know, sacrificed so much for me and my sister, through building their own careers, so that we didn't have to work while we were in college and we could just focus on being students and having fun and, you know, learning about ourselves. Both of my parents grew up poverty level poor, and they both worked their way into, you know, both successful people. So my dad owns car dealerships, and he's very street smart, never went to college, very much my personality. I'm very much like him. We're both salespeople at heart. And my mother, you know, grew up in poverty, you know, level Columbia, and had to win the scholarship every single year for the university she was in so that she could pay for it. And so, you know, when I got to college and I realized that this wasn't my thing, my dad never went to college, but it was his dream that his daughters, you know, graduate. And so I think that they really wanted me to like find my place and everything, but it just didn't really happen. And so but I just quickly realized that I wasn't in the right place, and I wanted to dedicate myself to something. I wrote this, you know, little essay for some reason a few years ago, and about my OCD and about like my journey in college. And there's like one part where I'm like, I envied people who had a passion. Like, I wanted a love like that. And so I truly used working at Abercrombie, even if it was me waking up at 5 a.m. for the, you know, the Black Friday sale. I loved the rush of feeling like I was doing something, even though I was, you know, starting from the very bottom. And so I did this for about 6 months, mostly behind my parents' back. My mom was the only one that knew. And so I actually took my mom to the store. And, you know, my parents, they do well for themselves. My sister and I, you know, we were probably, you know, one of the wealthiest people in our school. And, you know, it's Jacksonville, Florida. It's not like it's Miami or anything. And so we had the best cars, the biggest house, everything, but we still felt like such outsiders, because my sister and I didn't like to, you know, we were so embarrassed every time our parents would pick us up in a nice car and stuff, because we just wanted to be, you know, normal. So, you know, my mom came in and she was, you know, wearing all of her jewelry and her designer purses and everything. And she walks into the Abercrombie and she's literally like, "You work here?" And it was so much shock in her face. So the first reaction was, you know, this, you know, woman who, because of slaving away at work and then, you know, meeting my dad, etc., had now reached a level of success that definitely her parents had never dreamed about, in that top 1% in the country. And then kind of remembering that she literally had to make sandwiches and sell them to teachers when she was in high school and college to pay for her lunch. And she saw that in me. And I think she was really surprised, and she actually cried a little bit after we left. I think my mom realized that I was not going to be like everyone else or most people in my position, like her friends, who the children who just were kind of like, you know, I'm owed everything and I am not willing to work for it. And so I think my parents didn't really know I had that drive, because my sister was, you know, of course, working her arse off every single day at school, and I was just not getting it. And so I think she finally realized, wow, she wants to work hard. It's just school isn't really for her.
Thank you so much for sharing something that I think most people honestly struggle to talk about. You've probably experienced this surprise or reaction before, when talking to people about it, because I think people from privileged upbringing shy away from it, you know, don't want to talk about it publicly for sure.
Yes.
Because they feel like it lessens their own achievements or whatever the other reasons might well be. Obviously, people are complex, so there's a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah, you know, people can say that I'm not truly self-made, but the only thing my parents ever gave me for my business, because they definitely did not have any connections in the media or business space in New York City, all of the people they know are in Jacksonville, Florida, in the car business. But they loaned me $15,000 when I begged in my junior year, because I wanted to actually start, you know, putting effort into the money, into my business. And I had to literally sign a contract with them that if I didn't pay it back in 3 years, that they would own 50% of my company. Yeah. So I think, you know, the reason why I don't shy away from speaking about it is because it definitely is part of my story of how I grew up. But instead of saying, oh, great, like I've got everything, you know, the desire wasn't to make and have the life I didn't have. My desire and the shining star in front of me was, I want all of this without needing it from a man and having strings attached to everything. I want it myself. And so although, you know, people can say, you know, oh, she's not self-made because she comes from a, you know, a wealthy family, my father actually probably died inside the second that he realized that I was trying to be an entrepreneur, and, you know, basically said all I was doing was playing on the computer all day and trying to pretend to be an entrepreneur when I should just, you know, just study in school, and how lucky I was for the, you know, opportunity. And so my dad's mentality was always like, I don't want my daughters to have to work as hard as I did, because it nearly killed him. He had worked so hard so many years to achieve what he achieved. My parents definitely gave me the gift of not having to work during college, but they also, you know, made it very clear that my sister and I, we were not riding, you know, the free express. And so that's why after I quit Abercrombie and I started doing the Newsette, I realized this is the only chance in my entire life where I have 4 years paid for by my parents, where I can do anything I want. I can go party and make friends and whatever, or I can start up something that I can actually work at when I graduate. And so when I had that realization, it was almost like that high again with Abercrombie, but instead of the potential of maybe, you know, making a small wage and maybe becoming a manager, I was like, you know, this could actually get me a job after college that is a dream job. I never really thought about it as me ever being an entrepreneur, because again, I didn't think I was talented or, you know, smart enough.
If you're trying to grow your startup and you're dealing with companies outside of the UK, you're probably going to need ISO 27001 at some point. It's not the sexiest acronym, but it's basically the global standard for proving your security practices are up to scratch, like how you handle customer data. The same goes with SOC 2. You're going to need it if you're a SaaS company. But achieving these security frameworks can be very tedious and very costly. This is where our partner, Vanta, comes in. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work for certifications like ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, HIPAA, and more, getting you audit ready in weeks instead of months and saving you up to 85% of the cost. And as a special offer, our listeners get 20% off Vanta. Just head to vanta.com/secretleaders. That's vanta.com/secretleaders for 20% off. There's a link in the description. Look, you know I'm fascinated by AI, but until the machines take over, there's only one thing that's going to determine your company's fortunes. People. This isn't some kind of hollow point to make me look good. If you speak privately to any successful entrepreneur, they'll confirm it's true. So,
If you're a leader of a growing business, then you should check out Personio. It brings together all the important HR things like hiring, onboarding, payroll data, performance reviews, and so on. You don't want loads of employees sending you emails asking for time off. You want to be able to see things objectively, like it's taking you too long to hire. You want to do performance reviews well, having clear goals for people that are logged in a centralized system. And you want to do all these things in one simple tool without having to become an HR expert. All of this is possible with Personio. Check it out at personio.com/secret leaders. That's personio.com/secret leaders. There's a link in the show notes.
Daniela started the Newsette in 2015, during her second year at Boston University. Her dream was to work in a magazine, but she was worried her grades and lack of connections would mean she'd have no chance of getting an internship. So she decided to do what all good entrepreneurs do, just make her own magazine, in the form of a newsletter. She didn't receive much support, though, from those around her.
My team consisted of three people, me, myself, and I. I had to fucking hustle my ass off and not be taken seriously by every single person in my life, every single professor. I had trolls and haters when I literally had negative success. Like, it was just like bottom of the barrel. So, you know, I'm very open and honest about the fact that my father, with his mentality, and luckily I think it's changed, thought, you know, women weren't supposed to be the main providers and they were supposed to be everything, again, was supposed to be gravy. So my dad never even looked at me as a potential person to take over his businesses. I don't know if he thought, didn't think I had it in me, or if he just didn't want that life for me as a woman. And so I was very discouraged by my, you know, father, who it was also sad because I admired him so much and we were so similar and he was an entrepreneur. And it was almost like, wow, like if he doesn't believe in me, what am I doing? But once I started sending the newsletter, I was so addicted that waking up every day at 5 a.m. and eating three bowls of Fruity Pebbles to keep me up while I, you know, did 3 to 4 hours of newsletter work and then ran to class and then ran to the study room, etc. It got me on this high that, like, I, again, had such a chip on my shoulder and I kept saying, I'm going to prove everyone wrong. And so, you know, every single person in my life up until that point had told me, you know, maybe you should look at, you know, being an intern at this company because, you know, like you're not that like good at anything else. And, you know, kind of talking to me like I was like a lost cause. My dad actually said that I should practice the phrase, do you want fries with that shake? Whenever he would get mad at me for getting a bad grade, because he was like, that's your future. And I was obviously being compared to my sister, who was, you know, just an Ivy League genius.
Little did he know you'll end up buying McDonald's as a big fuck you.
No, yeah, I definitely have not bought McDonald's, but that would be nice. But that'd be a nice present for him. But it just, I don't blame him wholly because no, again, like I didn't know about any 20 something year old millionaire entrepreneurs. Like, and if I did, they were male and they were from Silicon Valley and they raised billions of dollars. And so no one believed in me. So I want to just point out that I have not, the trolling and the, you know, bashing started long before I found success. And it almost fueled me, like their words fueled me. When I published the Forbes article that I still, again, I blink every time I see it. So I posted the article. I essentially said, wow, never thought a headline like this would be written about me in Forbes, especially as a Latinx woman who struggles with ADHD, OCD, and depression. Thank you to my amazing The Newsette team and to everyone who has ever believed in me. But most of all, thank you to the people and professors who told me I wasn't smart, capable, or talented enough to ever be successful. Your brutal words kept me up at night, working my ass off to prove you wrong. Anyone can do anything. And that's really the only thing I wanted that article to show. You know, it's this big headline, "Meet the 27-year-old Latinx entrepreneur is now worth $220 million. Oh my gosh. But in that article, I'm very, very transparent about the fact that I am everything that success shouldn't look like. And if I would have seen someone like that when I was 19, it probably would have made it a lot easier and not so much of an emotional, traumatic journey for me to believe in myself when no one else did.
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying that resonates right now, which is you cannot be what you cannot see. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously for a lot of young women that see someone like you, that absolutely inspires and gives confidence that they can become the next Daniela. However, there's a really interesting paradox. I you know, again, because I speak to so many entrepreneurs, I find it all these themes so fascinating. There's just such an interesting paradox, because if you think about the words that you've said, thank you so much, essentially, for putting me down and telling me I couldn't do it. Fuck you, I've done it. Mm-hmm. I've had the same experiences a lot of times. I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs that are listening can totally relate to that attitude and angle. And therein lies the problem, that it drives an anger and a hunger to prove everyone wrong. At the same time, you know, we want the world to be kinder, to lift people up, to do all of these things. And actually, you know, again, another saying, but, you know, sometimes the world doesn't give you what you want, it gives you what you need. And yes, for some of us, like, that tough love, the journey against the odds is genuinely, you know, it's the hero's journey, it's the classic one, but it's really what is needed. You need your time in the wilderness, you need your time being told that you'll never amount to nothing. This is fuel. And I find this whole paradox so complicated, because I also work, like you do, in mental health. So I find it all so complicated, because I'm like, I know this stuff is, you know, it's great for resilience, but on the other side, you know, sensitivity and...
I have a strong opinion on this.
Excellent. I was hoping you would.
Is that why I'm here? So, you know, people can disagree with me or agree with me. I just think that it shouldn't have been as hard as it was for me to find success. Like, obviously, it's nearly impossible to build a successful business. Like, you have to dedicate yourself, you have to work your ass off, and still you could fail. But there are things that did happen to me that didn't have to happen, that because I was in such a fragile mental health state, that could have taken my life. Like, and truly there were moments where I was like, why am I even living? I can't live with the humiliation of all of these people being right. I do not want anyone to ever feel the way I felt, which is why I'm being very public about my story and investing in a lot of women who look like me, are of color, you know, maybe didn't love school, but are go-getters, because I truly believe in order to end the gender gap and the crazy gap between the amount of funding that women receive rather than men. And I have literally had personal experiences being laughed out of a boardroom by one of the biggest investors in the world for the Newsette, who told me I reminded him of his granddaughter, and not in a good way. And I cried and I said, you know, I'm going to prove him wrong too. But, you know, that shouldn't have to happen. You shouldn't have to earn your stripes that way. I'm hoping I'm able to clear a path where women know that when people say that to them, it's just fuel. It's not something that should make you depressed for a week and potentially, you know, ruin your mental health. So I believe in strength, and you have to be strong. You have to keep going. You have to be in survival mode as an entrepreneur. But there are so many things that could have been prevented that just weren't. And I'm grateful for it because it made me, but it could have also killed me.
One moment when she really struggled happened in Daniela's last year of university. She was working hard, doing both the Newsette and attending business school. Then, a semester before she was meant to graduate, she failed a key project.
There was this entrepreneur project that was famous at our business school, and where it's so ridiculous, but you are in a team of like 8 to 10 people, which it's like, now thinking back to it, it's like, if you're an entrepreneur, you're not working with 8 to 10 people. Like, you are working with 1 or 2 people. So I would have
loved- We're working with the 3 people you said earlier.
Me, myself, and I. And so that was stupid. But then also the way it was graded was, it was peer reviewed, and someone had in the group, somebody had to, it was like a scale. So some people could get A's, some people got B's, some people got C's, but somebody had, or two, one or two people had to get like a D or a C minus or a fail. And so I took this, you know, program that actually counted like a majority of our grade for that semester. And I was, you know, obviously an entrepreneur myself, but, you know, very shy about it. I didn't even know if I had told anyone about it yet, but like I was working on that business and it was blossoming while I was working with this other business, but I still gave, you know, all of my time and energy to it. And at the end of the day, I was kind of thrown under the bus because they needed, everyone liked each other in the group. You know, I was very helpful and I added a lot of value, but I wasn't friends with all of them. And they decided to kind of throw me under the bus and say, well, she has another business. There's no way she could have committed as much time as we all did to this. And I failed it. And because of that, I received a letter from, you know, whoever, the dean of BU, essentially saying that I not only had to retake the classes that I had failed because of this project, because it was the majority of the grade, but I also had to take all of my, you know, my first semester senior year classes on top of that. And I already wasn't a good student because I was, you know, dedicating so much time to my business. And if I didn't get a certain GPA, I would be kicked out. So I was essentially going to be kicked out of college 1 semester before graduation. And I, that moment, it was the lowest moment in my entire life. It was also when my OCD and ADHD, now I know, depression, it was all at the worst. I was crying every single day for months. I just couldn't control myself. I want to make clear that it wasn't just them failing me. They actually brought me to tears during the meeting and said, look, we don't think that you can do both. Like, we don't really honestly think you can do the business. So like, maybe you should just drop out and see if you can, but like, you definitely can't do both. And actually a year later, I ran into one of the teachers and it still wasn't a success, but it was getting, you know, bigger. And I ran into one of the teachers in the elevator and she came in and she looked at me and she smirked and she said, so how's your little newsletter going? And that just devastated me. I again, it was like another chip on my shoulder. And so there was a lot of emotional abuse and those professors in particular trying to bring me down during class and be like, oh, you think you know this because you have your little business and stuff that just was not necessary, because critical feedback is required for anybody to grow, but not like truly picking on somebody when they're at their worst moment and discouraging them. And finally, I went back to that person I was senior year of high school. And I said, I'm just going to get this shit done. And in the back of my mind, I was like, this kind of stuff doesn't happen to me where I succeed. Like, I kind of knew in the back of my mind, I was going to fail. And somehow I didn't, and I passed. And then my senior year, my last semester of college, senior year, it was all only entrepreneurship. So all of my professors were former entrepreneurs, or they really were passionate about entrepreneurship. And I got almost straight A's and I was on the dean's list. Compared to my last semester in senior year and how supportive those professors and, you know, administrators were, it was just night and day. And if I wouldn't have had the second, I maybe wouldn't have, you know, been in this position today.
When Daniela finished university, she focused on the Newsette full-time. It continued with the same core mission she started it with.
Yeah, I believed, you know, the modern-day woman didn't want to just know one part of the news sector. They wanted to know everything. And so it was almost like this 5-minute gift in your inbox that not only inspired them to have, you know, an incredible day and achieve everything that they know that they can achieve, but also showcase the stories of other women who have their dream jobs and who have been through, you know, what they want to go through and have advice. And so And, you know, not only learn about the news, you know, the typical news you would watch on a CNN, but learn about, you know, pop culture, fashion, beauty, tech, business, etc. And so a lot of the things, like the things to know, where those are the news, and there are a lot of things that our team now, I haven't written in quite a long time, but I wrote it every single morning for about probably 4 years, and never missed a day. The format is very similar to how it was 7 years ago, but the content has definitely evolved. And, you know, instead of only featuring people who are like the social media director at Michael Kors, who I thought was, you know, those are like incredible people to interview, and they have dream jobs that, you know, people in college would want to have. Those are the kind of people I had access to, and I would, you know, message on LinkedIn. But now we have people like, you know, Selena Gomez and Mandy Teefee, or Diane von Furstenberg. And so our content became a lot, you know, I guess more robust. But then the other thing is that we decided to launch this agency arm of our business. And so that's actually quite a story if you'd like me to tell it. It pretty much sounds straight out of a fairy tale.
I mean, you haven't let us down yet with good stories. So who would I be, other than starving our listeners of great content, who would I be to say no? Please go for it.
Okay, I hope I don't disappoint. So essentially about 3 years ago, I was in New York. You know, Newsette was just a newsletter business, and we were doing quite well. I think we were going to do $1 million that year. And I like barely paid myself. I mean, everything went back into the business. At that point, I had had one article published about me in Forbes. It was probably around, you know, 2018, 2019. And it was just talking about how, you know, I was building this newsletter, whatever. And Sandra Campos, who was the CEO of Diane von Furstenberg, reached out to me via LinkedIn. And I literally looked at her profile and I was like, this is a catfish. Like, how does this person know about me or care about me, whatever? And she basically was like, I love the Newsette. So does Diane. We want to meet with you. And I literally like showed my office. I was like, this is definitely a catfish, right? And they were like, no, like do the meeting. And so I go to the meeting, and Sandra wanted to bring me in because she loved the storytelling that I was doing with the Newsette. And she thought, you know, their brand was all about empowering women as well. And they also wanted a storytelling element. And so she goes, do you want to meet Diane? And I was like, yes. For those of you who don't know, she's an icon, and she's basically one of the first, you know, badass women in business. And Diane was actually in the middle of a meeting with somebody. And so I knew, I was like, I have like 2 minutes of this woman's time, and she's never going to remember my name ever again. And so I went to, we walked up the other big stairs to go to her office. And I had seen her office on TV, you know, in movies so many times. The door's open, she's in the middle of a meeting, and Sandra's like, I want you to meet, you know, Daniela. And I basically introduced myself and I said, you know, I think we should really do an editorial product together because you guys, you know, believe so much in female empowerment, and so do we as the Newsette, but we can actually editorialize that while including a lot of your clothes and make it almost like a DVF publication. And that one, it ended up being called The Weekly Wrap. And so then she was like, okay, it's nice to meet you. And I shook her hand and I looked her in the eyes and I said, you say that you are a female empowering brand. Well, what is more female empowering than hiring a 23-year-old and her company to make this for you? And I just looked her in the eyes, and I have no idea, I probably, you know, shit my pants at the same time, but I had no idea what came over me, but I knew like that was going to be my last moment. And she looked at me and she goes, okay, let's do it. And even Sandra was like, what? From that moment on, she became my fairy godmother, my mentor. She lovingly, hopefully, calls me a used car salesman. And so we decided to do the Weekly Wrap together, but she also has this In Charge movement, which is all about empowering women. And so I would say, you know, let's go talk to YouTube, let's go talk to Facebook, let's go do big partnerships with them. And so we were on a plane I saw on the calendar that International Women's Day was like 2 months away. And so I went to, you know, the back of the plane and I said, Diane, I have an idea. I think you have the most impressive connections in the world. You have the most high profile friends in the world. Let's do something big for International Women's Day that could actually change women's lives. And she goes, okay, what do you want to do? And I was like, give me a second. And so I went back and I thought about it, and then immediately it clicked, because again, going back to my philosophy, in order for women to actually become, you know, level in the playing field, they need the money to do so, and they need to succeed so then they can help other women. But I said, your best friend is Jeff Bezos. And she goes, yeah. And I go, well, Amazon is basically a collection of small businesses. And so what if we took International Women's Day and we put 20 small female-founded small businesses on the biggest billboard in the world and basically had them all sell out? And she goes, what's the biggest billboard in the world? And I said, the Amazon homepage. And she looked at me and she was like, okay, I'll ask. And so she emailed him, said my idea, and he said, okay, let's do it. She turned around to me and she goes, okay, here you go. I got it in for you. Now you have to deliver. And at that point, it was literally a three-person newsletter team. We were not an agency. And I knew at that point that that was a pivotal moment in my life, that I had to dedicate myself to do this. And so almost by myself, I literally took on this campaign, this national campaign, with the small business team. So I met with an executive and then they pointed me to the small business team. I did everything while my team was, you know, continuing on with the newsletter. But for 2 months, I essentially was the CEO of the Newsette, the newsletter company, but also running a one-person agency, doing things I'd never done before. So collaborating with you know, the Amazon team to actually design what the homepage was going to look like, actually pick the entrepreneurs we're going to feature, you know, write about what was so inspiring about them, create programming and amplification and, you know, assets that that they could share on social. We actually had Diane be the voice of Alexa for that day, and we've somehow pulled it off. It was one of the hardest moments of my life because I was just literally working 20 hours a day for those 2 months, but it was so worth it because when it came out, it was so popular. It was one of their most successful campaigns, and the small business team turned to us and said, us, which is, they didn't know, it was just me, like basically working on it, and said, hey, you know, we actually really like working with you as an agency. You deliver 10 times the results that our other agencies, which I now know were like the top agencies in the world. You get better talent and you're much scrappier and more creative. Will you do all of these other campaigns for us? And we were like, give us 2 weeks. And basically in those 2 weeks, we like hired, you know, a paid social expert, you know, more creative, like basically we beefed up like an agency and took that investment. And that's the year that we went from $1 million to $7 million. And then the next year to $40 million.
Pretty amazing. What is the transition then from one company to the next? Is the ambition to be like, you know what? People said I couldn't run two companies concurrently, so fuck them. Because people say that about me, and I think they're right. Like I told you, I'm, you know, late for my other company's meeting, so I'm going to learn from you how to do it well. yeah. But yeah, are you trying to be CEO of both at the same time? What is the deal? What is how does this transition play out?
Yeah, so we have the Newsette Media Group that has Newsette Newsletter and other media properties that we're launching. And then Newland, which is the name of our agency. And we've actually kept it quite a secret because we had so much demand that we couldn't fulfill it. And so finally, you know, in the last, like, you know, Forbes feature, et cetera, I kind of announced that Newland is a thing, and we've gotten incredible inquiries from some of the biggest brands in the world, which is really exciting. I am the founder and CEO of that, you know, organization that has those two, you know, business units under it. But I hired a president and a managing director. So the managing director really runs the agency, and the president runs the media side. And then I have an incredible chief of staff and CEO COO who help make it so that I am involved, but they are really helping run the day-to-day parts of the business. And I really add value, or I'm only focused on where I can add extreme amount of value instead of, you know, things that they could maybe do on my behalf. And so I would say it's probably like 80% Wondermind and 20% Newsette, or Newsette Media Group. And so Wondermind is my new company that was actually started out of, you know, the Newsette, because, or from the Newsette, because we had the amazing opportunity to interview Selena Gomez and Mandy Teefy about mental health. And I actually asked if I could do the interview instead of one of my editors. And I think they all thought, you know, is she like having a midlife crisis? Is she like a big Selena fan? But it was actually because the topic was about mental health, and no one on my team, no one in my life knew that I had such a affiliation to that, you know, I guess category, because I never talked about it. And so when I got on the interview, Selena and Mandy, they were in the interview, they were talking to each other as mother and daughter, but almost in ways that they never really even, you know, thought that, or never talked to each other before. So they were having conversations with each other that I was witnessing as like the, you know, fly in the room, that they had, were like, wow, we've never really talked about this. And it was all about mental health. And so after we stopped the interview, I said, you know, this might be really weird, we don't know each other, but, and you guys are like the fourth and fifth people I'm ever going to tell, or I've ever told in my entire life, but I've actually struggled from OCD since I was 6 years old, and depression, and, you know, a lot of other things. And so this was really inspiring. And before that moment, without being, you know, dramatic, I truly would have rather died than told anybody I had OCD, because I was already the 20-something, a Latina, you know, woman trying to be taken seriously in business. I didn't want to add, you know, mental illness on top of that because of the stigma. And in that moment, we really decided, you know, we all have such, so many competitive advantages in our spaces, so media, production, product, etc., that like we should build the biggest company in the world that democratizes and destigmatizes mental health, and actually introduces a term called mental fitness, where you work on your mental health every single day, but it's entertaining. And it's through, you know, reading interviews from people like Serena Williams talking about her mental health, the first interview after she, you know, announced her retirement, reading from the best experts in the world who are on our committee. So the best psychiatrists, therapists, social workers, etc. It's almost like a one-to-many model where they might charge $1,000 a session, but anyone in the world can read this content for free because we don't charge for our content. It's all ad-based and partnership-based. And we have, right now, it's a 3-times-a-week newsletter. We're launching something very big very soon, and then another medium as well this year. And we have a lot more to do, but in the end, if I can help be a little tiny piece of the force of change to democratize and destigmatize mental health because of what I've been through and growing my company and, you know, childhood, etc., that would truly be enough for me and feel like I actually made an impact in the world.
Love it. And I completely get it as well. So many questions about working with a mother and daughter team as well. That's going to be fascinating. However, in the spirit of running out of time and also not wanting to milk you for everything, because so much more to learn from you by following your journey, I'd love to know, just on reflection, like, what is the key lesson that you would share for entrepreneurs that are listening, that are inspired by your journey, that want to go on a similar one to you?
Well, first of all, I am so honored to inspire anyone. But I think the biggest lesson that I've learned is truly, I used to think professors, parents, you know, people with authority, they were the all-seeing oracles of the world, that if they told you you couldn't do something, it couldn't be done. And by, you know, pure survival and having to believe that they had to be wrong, not, you know, being strong enough to believe that, but just having no other choice, I realized that nobody can build your destiny except for yourself. And so even if you have no expertise in a space, no business expertise, no background, no connections, no anything, if you are passionate about something that you want to start and you want to change the world, then you have everything you need. Because what I did was I studied books, I studied podcasts, I studied people's journeys. I learned as much as I could from the people who had failed and succeeded in the spaces I wanted to be in. And so I think the number one lesson that I could, you know, ever say to an entrepreneur is never give up. Because if I would have given up, you know, 2 years ago, I would have never gotten to this place. And even when it gets hard, even when everybody says that it's a stupid idea and it'll never work, just believe in yourself enough, have enough, you know, I guess, self-awareness to see if you have to pivot, but believe in yourself enough that you know that you can do it no matter what the end result looks like.
Amazing. Daniela, thank you so much for your time on Secret Leaders. It's been inspiring, humbling, and a lot of fun as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be on here, Dan. So I thank you for having me. I'm a big fan. I like binged a bunch of the podcasts when I realized that I was going to be on it. So I just am so honored that you want to hear my story. And thank you again for having me.
Now that's an endorsement. If you're also a fan of Secret Leaders, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. We love to hear what you think, and it does actually make a difference. Next week on Secret Leaders.
A lot of entrepreneurs are trying to come up with the tagline that is going to describe who they want to be in 10 years. It doesn't work. The tagline that we ended up going out with was "The things people do for $5. Does it describe Fiverr, the public company, 13 years after? No, doesn't matter.
That's Misha Kaufman, founder of Fiverr, a global online marketplace for freelancers like designers and copywriters. Now, he founded the company in 2009 and took it through its IPO a decade later. They now have over 4 million people buying freelance services. Find out how he did it. Thanks for listening to this episode of Secret Leaders. I've been your host, Dan Murray-Serta. It was produced by Ruth Edwards and brought together by our head of podcasts, Will Stollerman.